Chapter 36. Mark Twain was writing a great deal at this time. Howells was always urging him to send something to the Atlantic, declaring a willingness to have his name appear every month in their pages, and Clemens was generally contributing some story or sketch. The proof referred to in the next letter was of one of these articles. To W.D. Howells, in Boston. Hartford, November 23, 75. My dear Howells, herewith is the proof. In spite of myself, how awkwardly I do jumble words together, and how often I do use three words, where one would answer a thing I am always trying to guard against. I shall become as slovenly a writer as Charles Francis Adams, if I don't look out. That is said in jest, because of course I do not seriously fear getting so bad as that. I never shall drop so far toward his and Bret Hart's level, as to catch myself saying, he must have been wiser to have believed, that he might have accomplished it, if he could have felt, that he would have been supported by those who should have antsy. The reference to Bret Hart, reminds me that I often accuse him of being a deliberate imitator of Dickens. And this in turn reminds me, that I have charged unconscious plagiarism upon Charlie Warner, and this in turn reminds me, that I have been delighting my soul for 2 weeks over a brand new, and ingenious way of beginning a novel, and behold, all at once it flashes upon me that Charlie Warner originated the idea 3 years ago, and told me about it. Aha! So much for self-righteousness. I am well repaid. Here are 108 pages of MS, new and clean, lying disgraced in the waste paper basket, and I am beginning the novel over again in an unstolen way. I would not wonder, if I am the worst literary thief in the world, without knowing it. It is glorious news, that you like Tom Sawyer so well. I mean to see to it, that the review of it shall have plenty of time, to appear before the other notices. Mrs. Clemens decides with you, that the book should issue as a book for boys, pure and simple, and so do one. It is surely the correct idea. As to that last chapter, I think of just leaving it off, and adding nothing in its place. Something told me, that the book was done, when I got to that point, and so the strong temptation, to put Huck's Life at the Widow's into detail, instead of generalizing it in a paragraph was resisted. Just send Sawyer to me by express, I enclose money for it. If it should get lost it will be no great matter. Company interfered last night, and so private theatricals goes over till this evening, to be read aloud. Mrs. Clemens is mad, but the story will take that all out. This is going to be a splendid winter night for fireside reading, anyway. I am almost at a dead standstill with my new story, on account of the misery of having to do it all over again. We all send love to you all. Ears ever Mark. The story referred to may have been any one of several begun by him at this time. His head was full of ideas for literature of every sort. Many of his beginnings came to nothing, for the reason that he started wrong, or with no definitely formed plan. Others of his literary enterprises were condemned by his wife for their grotesqueness or for the offense they might give in one way or another, however worthy the intention behind them. Once he wrote a burlesque on family history e autobiography of a damned fool. Ivy wouldn't have it, he said later, so I gave it up. The world is indebted to Mark Twain's wife for the check she put upon his fantastic or violent impulses. She was his best public, clear-headed and wise. That he realized this, and was willing to yield, was by no means the least of his good fortunes. We may believe, that he did not always yield easily, and perhaps sometimes only out of love for her. In the letter which he wrote her on her 30th birthday we realize something, of what S. he had come to mean in his life. To Mrs. Clemens on her 30th birthday. Hartford. November 27, 1875. Livy darling, 6 years have gone by, since I made my first great success in life and won you, and 30 years have passed since Providence made preparation for that happy success by sending you into the world. Every day we live together adds to the security of my confidence, that we can never any more wish to be separated than, that we can ever imagine a regret, that we were ever joined. You are dearer to me today, my child, than you were upon the last anniversary of this birthday. You were dearer then than you were a year before. You have grown more and more dear from the first of those anniversaries, and I do not doubt that this precious progression will continue on to the end. Let us look forward to the coming anniversaries, with their age and their gray hairs, without fear and without depression, trusting and believing that the love we bear each other will be sufficient to make them blessed. So, with abounding affection for you and our babies, I hail this day that brings you the matronly grace and dignity of 3 decades. Always yours, S50. C. End of this Project Gutenberg text of Letters Vol. 2, by Mark Twain. Mark Twain's Letters 1876 to 1885, arranged with comment by Albert Bigelow Payne, Volume 3. XVI. Letters, 1876, chiefly to W.D. Howells. Literature and Politics. Planning a play with Bret Hart, the Monday Evening Club of Hartford was an association of most of the literary talent of that city, and it included a number of very distinguished members. The writers, the editors, the lawyers, and the ministers of the gospel who composed it were more often than not men of national or international distinction. There was but one paper at each meeting, and it was likely to be a paper that would later find its way into some magazine. Naturally, Mark Twain was one of its favorite members, and his contributions never failed to arouse interest and discussion. A Mark Twain night brought out every member. In the next letter we find the first mention of one of his most memorable contributions, a story of one of life's moral aspects. The tale, now included in his collected works, is, for some reason, little read today. Yet the curious allegory, so vivid in its seeming reality, is well worth consideration. To W.D. Howells, in Boston. Hartford, January 11, 76. My dear Howells, indeed we haven't forgotten the Howellses, nor scored up a grudge of any kind against them. But the fact is, I was under the doctor's hands for 4 weeks on a stretch, and have been disabled from working for a week or so beside. I thought I was well, about 10 days ago, so I sent for a shorthand writer, and dictated answers to a bushel or so of letters that had been accumulating during my illness. Getting everything shipshape and cleared up, I went to work next day upon an Atlantic article, which ought to be worth $20 per page, which is the price they usually pay for my work, I believe, for, although it is only 70 pages MS, less than 2 days' work, counting my bulk, I have spent 3 more days trimming, altering, and working at it. I shall put in 1 more day's polishing on it, and then read it before our club, which is to meet at our house Monday evening, the 24th inst. I think it will bring out considerable discussion among the gentlemen of the club, though the title of the article will not give them much notion of what is to follow, this title being the facts concerning the recent carnival of crime in Connecticut, which reminds me that today's Tribune says there will be a startling article in the current Atlantic, in which a being which is tangible but invisible will figure exactly the case with the sketch of mine which I am talking about. However, mine can lie unpublished a year or two as well as not, though I wish that contributor of yours had not interfered with his coincidence of heroes. But what I am coming at is this. Won't you and Mrs. Howells come down Saturday the 22nd, and remain to the club on Monday night? We always have a rattling good time at the club, and we do want you to come, ever so much. Will you? Now say you will. Mrs. Clemens and I are persuading ourselves that you Twain will come. My volume of sketches is doing very well, considering the times. Received my quarterly statement today from Bliss, by which I perceive that 20,000 copies have been sold, or rather, 20,000 had been sold 3 weeks ago. A lot more, by this time, no doubt. I am on the sick list again and was, day before yesterday, but on the whole I am getting along. Here's ever Mark, Howells wrote, that he could not come down to the club meeting, adding that sickness was quite out of character for Mark Twain, and hardly fair on a man who had made so many other people feel well. He closed by urging, that blissery out Tom Sawyer. Apostrophe Hat Boy is going to make a prodigious hit. Clemens answered. To W.D. Howells, in Boston. Hartford, January 18, 76. My dear Howells, thanks, and ever so many, for the good opinion of Tom Sawyer. Apostrophe apostrophe Williams has made about 300 rattling pictures for it, some of them very dainty. Poor devil, what a genius he has, and how he does murder it with rum. He takes a book of mine, and without suggestion from anybody builds no end of pictures just from his reading of it. There was never a man in the world, so grateful to another as I was to you day before yesterday, when I sat down, in still rather wretched health, to set myself to the dreary and hateful task of making final revision of Tom Sawyer, and discovered, upon opening the package of MS, that your pencil marks were scattered all along. This was splendid, and swept away all labor. Instead of reading the MS, I simply hunted out the pencil marks, and made the emendations which they suggested. I reduced the boy battle to a curt paragraph. I finally concluded to cut the Sunday school speech down to the first two sentences, leaving no suggestion of satire, since the book is to be for boys and girls. I tamed the various obscenities until I judged that they no longer carried offense. So, at a single sitting I began and finished a revision which I had supposed would occupy 3 or 4 days and leave me mentally and physically fagged out at the end. I was careful not to inflict the MS upon you until I had thoroughly and painstakingly revised it. Therefore, the only faults left were those that would discover themselves to others, not me and these you had pointed out. There was one expression which perhaps you overlooked. When Huck is complaining to Tom of the rigorous system in vogue at the widow's, he says the servants harass him with all manner of compulsory decencies, and he winds up by saying colon and they comb me all to hell.
No exclamation point.
Long ago, when I read that to Mrs. Clemens, she made no comment. Another time I created occasion to read that chapter to her aunt and her mother,
both sensitive and loyal subjects of the kingdom of heaven, so to speak,
and they let it pass. I was glad, for it was the most natural remark in the world for that boy to make,
and he had been allowed few privileges of speech in the book.
When I saw that you two had let it go without protest, I was glad, and afraid, too afraid you hadn't observed it. Did you? And did you question the propriety of it? Since the book is now professedly and confessedly a boys and girls hook, that darn word bothers me some nights, but it never did until I had ceased to regard the volume as being for adults. Don't bother to answer now,
for you've writing enough to do without allowing me to add to the burden.
But tell me when you see me again, which we do hope will be next Saturday or Sunday or Monday. Couldn't you come now, and mull over the alterations which you are going to make in your MS, and make them after you go back? Wouldn't it assist the work, if you dropped out of harness and routine for a day or two, and have that sort of revivification which comes of a holiday dash forgetfulness of the workshop? I can always work after I've been to your house. And if you will come to mine now, and hear the club toot their various horns over the exasperating metaphysical question which I mean to lay before them in the disguise of a literary extravaganza, it would just brace you up like a cordial.
I feel sort of mean trying to persuade a man to put down a critical piece of work at a critical time, but yet I am honest in thinking it would not hurt the work, nor impair your interest in it to come under the circumstances.
Mrs. Clemens says, maybe the Howellses could come Monday, if they cannot come Saturday. Ask them, it is worth trying. Well, how's that? Could you? It would be splendid if you could. Drop me a postal card. I should have a twinge of conscience if I force you to write a letter.
I am honest about that.
And if you find you can't make out to come, tell me that you bodies will come the next Saturday, if the thing is possible, and stay over Sunday. Here's ever Mark. Howells, however, did not come to the club meeting, but promised to come soon, when they could have a quiet time to themselves together. As to Huck's language, he declared,
"D have that swearing out in an instant. I suppose I didn't notice it, because the locution was so familiar to my Western sense, and so exactly the thing that Huck would say. Clemens changed the phrase to, they comb me all to thunder, and so it stands today. The Arnival of Crime, having served its purpose at the club, found quick acceptance by Howells for the Atlantic. He was so pleased with it, in fact, that somewhat later he wrote, urging that its author allow it to be printed in a dainty book, by Osgood, who made a specialty of fine publishing. Meantime Howells had written his Atlantic notice of Tom Sawyer, and now enclosed Clemens a proof of it. We may judge from the reply that it was satisfactory. To W.D. Howells, in Boston. Apple 3, 76. My dear Howells, it is a splendid notice, and will embolden weak-kneed journalistic admirers to speak out, and will modify, or shut up the unfriendly. To ear God and dread the Sunday school exactly described that old feeling which I used to have, but I couldn't have formulated it. I want to enclose one of the illustrations in this letter, if I do not forget it. Of course the book is to be elaborately illustrated, and I think that many of the pictures are considerably above the American average, in conception if not in execution. I do not re-enclose your review to you, for you have evidently read and corrected it, and so I judge you do not need it. About 2 days after the Atlantic issues I mean to begin to send books to principal journals and magazines. I read the Arnival of Crime proof in New York when worn and witless, and so left some things unamended which I might possibly have altered had I been at home. For instance, I shall always address you in your own SNIVELINGDRAWL, baby. I saw that you objected to something there, but I did not understand what. Was it that it was too personal? Should the language be altered? Or the hyphens taken out? Won't you please fix it the way it ought to be, altering the language as you? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.